Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson, and I'll be your host for this one, as per usual. And I'm joined by Scott and Joris this evening. Guys, how are you doing at the end of the regular season?
Really well, actually, really well. I am actually off for a few days this week, so I'm managing to indulge myself right royally. It's also my birthday tomorrow as of recording, so if anybody wants to send me anything, feel free. I do accept late gifts.
Did we forget about that, Vin?
Don't worry, I'll make space for it later.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Mechelen didn't do you a solid on your birthday week, so maybe you should write to them and complain. Before we start the episode, just want to say a massive thanks to everyone that engaged with a couple of kind of questions we put out about kind of structure of the podcast and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, we are 3 years deep into this, I think, now. It feels like it's been a lot longer, but into our third season, we're still trying to work out the best form and everything. So we do really appreciate your feedback. One of the recommendations that we thought was great was kind of getting rid of kind of the description of what happened in matches and stuff like that, and just diving straight into the analysis. So that's what we're going to do. But before that, I will actually run over the scores from the weekend, just so we have an idea of what did happen. No Friday night games this week, so we went straight into Saturday. Standard Liège beat Erpen 4-0. Kortrijk with a shock win in Anderlecht, they won 1-0. Into Sunday, St. Truiden came back from 1-0 down to beat Club Brugge 2-1. And Antwerp and Union left it late, but they both drew 1-1. Cercle Brugge beat Molenbeek 4-0. Gent beat Charleroi 5-0. Leuven left it very late to beat Mechelen 1-0. And then Vestalo drew 1-1 with Genk. So let's start in Liège. Goals from Kanga, Balakwisha, Yeboah, and an own goal from Charles Cook were enough for Standard, who have absolutely nothing to play for, to beat Erpen 4-0. This also, guys, spelt the end of Florian Kohfeldt's time in charge. It wasn't the club that made the decision. I think I said a few weeks ago I thought the club might sack him, but he decided to walk away. Do we think this is kind of a dignified exit to give them a real chance, or do you think he just doesn't want the blemish of a relegation on his CV?
Well, it's a funny one, this one, in a way, because in thinking about it, I actually have a certain degree of respect for his decision, because at least he's held his hands up and went, you know, I can't save you. Although, as Ben was saying, you know, I think it was kind of obvious a few weeks leading up to then that that was probably going to be the case. I was having a closer look at his numbers today, and that 31 game spell that he was there for it doesn't make for good reading, not surprisingly. 31 games, losing 21 of them, winning 7, drawing 3. Points per match on average, 0.77. That's not going to get you anywhere in any league, results like that. So I think, you know, falling on your sword in the manner he has, I think, is actually pretty dignified. I think most coaches would stay in there till the end. So it's a brave one. I think he's left them in a spot, though. That's the problem now. I don't think anybody can come in and have the sort of bounce that's going to make a real difference to them now, to be honest. But you never know, because it looked like it was all going to turn for them in a way that nobody expected up until very recently as well. So, I kind of admire him jumping, to be honest.
Yeah, and in addition, of course, now it's a completely different competition that starts for them. So it's really difficult to judge, which at least three and actually all four of the teams in that relegation playoffs are not in the best of states, which is, well, normal out of these playoffs, but if you have to play these playoffs, but and you would not put any money on either one of them, I think. Maybe Charleroi a little more because, spoiler alert, they went in, but they have a bit of a gap to the other sides, but none of the other three you could put any money on who's going to be the one. That really makes a jump forward, even outside of the relegation play, completely out of the relegation places or to the playoffs, so that they have to play against the third in the Challenger Pro League. Yeah. Okay, I went on a tangent here, of course, that Kohfeldt resigning. It's an interesting one. I guess it's really difficult to judge. It looked really like the club was taken by surprise as well. So that's the main thing. Indeed, I don't think they will have someone lined up. Of course, he has given them a little bit of time now during the international break, but also valuable time to really put your team together for these playoffs as well, of course. So I think they still better make a decision quick. Or if they stay with also goes for the decision if they go with the caretaker manager that is now definitely has taken over. That's on that topic. Not that much to say about the game itself, I guess. The one noteworthy thing, of course, is another thing that's also not really related to the game itself. The passing of Leon Semmeling. The Standard fans had put their work into it as well as both halves to really make a good atmosphere, tifos, and so on to remember him, remembrance of him, and maybe a third thing that's worth saying is a bit more happy from their point of view, of course, is Bodar getting the call up again for the Red Devils for this international break. Although I would presume it's unlikely he will make any minutes, but still, a reward for his decent season, a good season even, I would say. So, that's one of the few Standard players that can say that.
We've been talking a little bit, haven't we, guys, about the fact that kind of Walloon football's having a bit of a crisis at the moment for a number of reasons. And the sad news of Leon Semmeling this week, I suppose, kind of just underlines that. I mean, he is that rare thing nowadays, a one-man club. 15-year career at Standard Liège, 1959 to 1974, 455 appearances, 78 goals, I think. Quite incredible, really. 35 caps for the national team as well, 2 goals. Went to the 1970 World Cup. Also played in Euro 72 on home soil in Belgium as well. And he's quite an important part in the emergence of Standard as a force as well in Belgian football, because up till this point, Standard had only won one title, 1958. Come the 1960s, they win 2 in the 60s and then some in the early 70s. He's actually part of a side that wins 3 back-to-back, 69, 70 and 71. So quite extraordinary back-to-back Belgian Cups during that time as well. So an absolute legend, not only of Standard Liège, but Walloon football, just to kind of tie all that together.
Yeah, they're definitely quite far away from winning back-to-back titles or cups at the moment, despite obviously this comprehensive result. I think just before we do move on Kofeld, I think you both kind of touched on some kind of key points. And for me, it's yes, he's given them time, but the way it's taken this club by surprise is kind of the biggest red flag. It's almost just kind of he's just kind of dumped them in a situation that they weren't prepared for, and we know that they aren't spending any money. So whether you rate him highly as a coach or not, he's probably the most experienced coach they could have in this period, if you know what I mean, like in terms of he's got experience in the Bundesliga and he's been involved in relegation battles with Werder Bremen, which may say a little bit more about him as a coach than other things. But I feel like it's a little bit of a jump off, and it's kind of, he may say that it's given them the best chance, but I don't think it gives them any chance. I don't see how it gives them a chance, like having to get a new head coach in to kind of do anything else, because I don't know who they go for. Like Yves Van der Haar, that was the only name I could think of, but I don't, is he going to want to go there? Like, who's going to want to go there?
We'll get to him.
Part that one. A head coach is definitely going to be stared around for the playoffs, and who knows, may achieve the impossible. For Alex Anderson, he's done it again. Travelled to Lotto Park, Anderlecht on an absolute tear at the moment, but it's contract that came out of the win thanks to Isaac Davies again. Awful mistake from Zeno de Bast, really, really poor defending from him that gave away the goal. But they're the only side in that kind of bottom four of the playoffs who actually had a positive result on the weekend and didn't get absolutely battered, which I think says so much about kind of what he's instilled in that side since he's come in, doesn't it? And it's for Anderlecht, it's a really poor result in terms of it would have really helped put some pressure on the top. But because of the way the halving of the points worked, it doesn't really matter as much. Like, they're still one game behind, so it's kind of like they've still got the opportunity to catch up. But yeah, for Kortrijk, it's a massive win because they're now not the bottom of the table. And they're very much in with a shout. And like I just said, they're actually technically, I guess, the form team based on this last match day.
It's funny how psychology works in football, isn't it, guys? Because last week we were talking about Union and the gap being narrowed, the points being dropped there, and Anderlecht taking slight advantage of that, and how that could be, you know, or would that be a big boost to them? And actually, it's turned out the following week to kind of be quite the opposite. I mean, this is a really poor result for them. It really is. There's no doubt about that. They probably didn't do enough to win the game either. So I think the result will be doubly galling for them in a way. Kortrijk dug in, played reasonably well on the whole, and, you know, managed to nick it. I mean, that's only their third ever win at Lotto Park as well. So it's pretty impressive in its own right. First home loss of the season for Anderlecht, only the second time they've failed to score as well this season. You know, we've talked a lot about them maybe overperforming a little bit and being complimentary of their consistency, but this was just a really weird one. But as Ben was underlining there, and I think I'm going to say it again because it's kind of important, in the scheme of things, it hasn't actually harmed them that much, which is kind of odd. It perhaps comes at a sensitive point for them, though. That's the only thing that we don't really know, and we're going to find out you know, how this will play out in the next few weeks. We got quite an interesting listener's question about Anderlecht, which we'll get to later as well. But yeah, a weird one this. And Kortrijk are still alive and are arguably the favourite side, possibly, you know, in terms of their recent form, if anyone's going to escape the drop to do that in any form.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even in the last spot anymore. That's probably the first time in, well, forever this season, I guess, even potentially. Anderlecht, these last three games have been really disappointing, to be honest, against the three Dortmund teams. Of course, yes, the other two, they still won and probably deserved to win as well, but the performances were not all that great. Okay, against Molenbeek, it was not really necessary. I guess anymore after three goals, given away to you. But nonetheless, also against Eupen the game before that at home, it was not their best performance. And with a bit of misfortune, they might not have won that one either. So it's of course then the question, what is going to last? Is it a signal for something? That maybe... Then I'll probably get back to this point when we answer that question, or maybe we should just go ahead and answer it. I'll leave that to our host to decide in a while. But indeed, Anderlecht's first home loss, the last team to lose at home as well in the last game day. Scott mentioned that they only failed to score once more. That was also on the first match day of the season and the last of the regular season, that is, obviously. But, I found that weirdly interesting, but not that it has any... Well, it's just a coincidence, obviously, but still. Last defeat was in October, that famous game against Vandaag as well, that they, in other circumstances, might not have lost as well. And also Riemer making some weird choices, I guess, as well, like starting both Vasquez and Dolberg together up front. It's not necessary. I think it can work, but the problem is their squad's depth is not high enough so that if that doesn't work, they couldn't really change that much up front anymore in the terms of striking position. Of course, they still have some creative players for behind the strikers and wingers, but when it didn't work, he couldn't really add much up front anymore. Of course, also Verscharen again getting off injured. I do not know if there's an injury update on that yet. But okay, I suppose hopefully that's more of a precaution. Like I said, like these last few games, like, I'm not very convinced by Anderlecht. Despite yes, they grabbed most of the points, they might come to regret it, of course. Right now, it sounds like, okay, yes, it's still within one game, but they could have been even closer, of course. And, who knows? It can make a difference, all these points. I can't talk about this game without talking about Kortrijk as well. Obviously, Dave is finally with that away goal. If I'm not mistaken, he scored all his previous goals on home soil. I think that stat was still alive. I've used it before, but I do think that's really the case. They do rely on him a lot as well, of course. He scored 8 of their 22 goals scored. So, yeah, that's almost Dinkian averages. that's maybe a bit of overstatement, but also he's not really an out-and-out striker of nature. So that's actually the more stunning part of it. Only their second away win of the season as well. And, yeah, then... Yeah, okay. A result, the Leuven results that we'll get to later on might put a spanner in the wheels there. But I had written down this win, and I think Ben even mentioned it as well in our chat as well. But that this win gives them not only a chance of getting out of this the straight relegation spots, but even out of that playoff spot. Now the gap might be too big, but we'll have to see also their psychology. Even against Charleroi, they have a psychological advantage, I would say, at the moment. But yeah, okay, it's only 6 games as well. There's only so much you can do in 6 games, and we'll have to see what that is. But I do give them a big fire chance of survival, to be honest.
Since you mentioned kind of sports psychology, both of you there, you've also got to think that in the past few weeks, they've actually been playing with nothing to lose. And now suddenly they actually have something to lose, don't they? They've jumped into that relegation playoff spot. So it's like suddenly it's kind of flips. But I think one thing I would say about them as well is you kind of look at like who's got a difference maker within the teams. And Kadri can, we've seen him do it where he can just make the difference in the game. Like he doesn't do it. He's not as consistent as you like him to be. And especially as kind of, the other Algerian midfielder within that relegation battle has been quite inconsistent and has been quite unfit for Charleroi. So you kind of look at Kadri and you're like, well, he could make the difference for them in this playoffs. He is that kind of special player compared to Erpen and Molenbeek. Like, they don't really have anyone that could do that kind of special moment to score goals. So, yeah, definitely looking at Kadri. Let's go to Sunday St. Sluiden. Like I said, Jugler actually gave Club Brugge the lead. Then Mignolet went off injured, brought back way too quickly, clearly. Nordignac is back in goal. St. Truden won the game. Zara Salam scored. Abubakari Koita, who we called out last week, has not even scored for a while. He's like, lads, don't worry, I'm still here. And that was it for Ronnie Dyler. Lots of chatter coming out after the game that the board were considering his position. He has been sacked. He's come out and said some things. The board have said some things. People have said some things. It kind of felt like an inevitable, it was going to happen at the end of the season, so they've just kind of done it now. I'm not sure if this result was like even if they'd won, maybe he would have gone. I don't know, I'm not sure. But they've obviously, they've placed Nicky Hayen in charge, and long-time listeners of the podcast remember Nicky Hayen from his Vaslan Beveren days. Obviously failed to keep them up, but he was quite highly rated by the people within the club. They really did like Hayen as a head coach. They thought he was quite good. He went to Club Next. He's been doing stuff there. Now he's going to take over for the rest of the season. Carl Gerrits has already been mentioned as a possible replacement. We have got a question about kind of left field choices that we might have for a further replacement as well. So we'll get to that later. But Scott, I know you've obviously known Ronnie Dyler as a head coach for quite a while, given his time at Celtic and stuff like that. And you said you had a kind of defence of him to come, and Yura said he might counter that, so I'm kind of setting up a nice little debate, which would be quite nice. So I hope you've got a counter, Yura, otherwise I've just kind of thrown you into the deep end and hope that you've got something.
Yura always has a counter. That's what makes this show great. I was having a look at this and thinking about it, and my reaction when the news was kind of confirmed, although it was no great secret this was kind of coming, it was just when it was going to come, was kind of disappointment for Ronnie a little bit, and I can see why he's sad. He was talking to the media just very recently, in fact, yesterday evening, He was talking about, you know, sadness about it ending in the way that it has, and I can completely see where that's coming from. If you look at his overall record, and we'll break this down, Joris will break it down even more, because I know he wants to do that. If you look at his overall record, there's, 49 games there. He wins 28 of them, draws 11, loses 10, points per match, 1.94. Now, obviously, that's everything altogether. Domestically, their form has been a bit blah, in truth, when you look at those numbers. But the bigger picture all round, I think, is actually pretty respectable. One of the interesting things that he said last night was that he felt there was a disconnect, really, between where he felt the club was actually at this moment and where the hierarchy upstairs feel that it should be. Naturally, they want instant results all the time. I think Ronnie was of the mind that the side is in a degree of transition. The problem he's got, obviously, is that that squad is without a shadow of a doubt, there's enough quality there to go and win that title. And I think that's obviously the board's point. So I can kind of see both points of view here, but I do have a lot of sympathy for them, because I think over the course of the piece, that is time there in Bruges, it hasn't been as bad as perhaps some club fans would have you believe if you talk to them. We know earlier in the season, it's worth reminding people of this, we know earlier on there was a degree of interference from upstairs and elements of team selection and things like that. And once that was straightened out, that's when their form really started to improve. It coincided with that, and that's not a coincidence either. So this is a club that has, in truth, if we look at the bigger picture, a bit of a history of interference where they shouldn't. You know, there's an empire there that consists of Vincent Manet, who we know is leaving, and Bart Verheyga, the president. And, you know, it all goes through these two individuals, which isn't unusual, of course, but it is a problem when the overall footballing infrastructure isn't right. So Bob Maydew is coming in to replace Vincent. And in fact, he's already started. There's going to be a transition. He'll be the new CEO. Davy Rigaud is the sports coordinator. And Martin de Dobbelier is the global sports director. What we don't know yet, and this is the most important role of the lot, we don't know who the new technical director is going to be, because it's them that should really be appointing the next head coach. You know, if it doesn't work that way, then there's going to be further problems. We know that Tom Calloway, of course, who was in the kind of sporting director role for a little while, for a short period, left the club effectively because Manet and Verheyga wouldn't really let him do his job. So there aren't clear job roles there in the infrastructure. That's been a big problem, and that's a long-standing one. One other thing I was thinking actually about this today was things have never really been the same at clubs since Philippe Clément left. Obviously, when he left, it was the right decision for there to be a parting of the ways there. There was a stagnation and there needed to be some kind of change. But, you know, they've never really been the same since he did go. They've had four coaches in a two-year period. We've seen Schreuder, Ufkens, who was a bit of a disaster, really, in retrospect, did well in Europe, but, you know, didn't do great standard either. And there's all sorts of question marks around Carl. Scotty Parker was just weird. That's all we can say about that one. There was maybe some agencies or agents on the phone with that, because that will go down as one of the weirdest ones in a long time. And obviously Dyla, who when he came in, I said he was a good choice. I think he fits what Bruges are about, and what they want to be about, perhaps. And it's just unfortunate that Ronnie's argument is, look, give me a little bit longer, you know, maybe a season to transition this side. Because I think there is something in that. Despite there being quality there, you know, there has to be a compromise somewhere. And I just feel maybe Club Bruges are not quite accepting of the fact that there are some other kids on the block here who are doing quite well. And, you know, not winning that league and not being in the Champions League means some of the money that would have been there wasn't. So I think sometimes you have to shift your perspectives a little bit. And I think, yeah, you just need to reassess things. But for God's sake, get your infrastructure right.
Okay, no argument about the infrastructure. I think in general, we're more or less on the same line. But this is still the squad with by far the highest transfer sums given out and the highest wages. That's definitely that part, last one, the highest transfer sums. Actually, I'm not completely sure, but I wanted to make the point about the wages. So yeah, that's where, of course, that's the responsibility of the people getting those players as well. But I guess at least some part of that should be spoken about with the manager, although yeah, there are a few things like the central defender thing that like seems to be that they really didn't want to get one from higher up. Of course, that's difficult, but still somehow should be able to push that through, I guess, as a manager. And well, yeah, but with Hufkes, you mentioned the European stats saving him a little bit of grace. But I guess to a lesser extent, you could still say the same about Dala then as well. Of course, and mainly, yeah, they just have not been winning enough games. He's made some weird choices as well. They did all these defensive changes, like you can't disregard them. Of course, they have cost them points as well. And I guess also here, we've talked about it already a bit as well, but that definitely will play a big role as well. The psychological effects, I think it's probably 2 months ago, we were still saying like maybe they will be actually the only title challenger still. Maybe it was less than 2 months ago still, and they've completely fallen off that again. So they started bad, they had a good spell, and then they go back. Yeah, that does something with your expectations for the one season as well, I guess, inside one season. Yeah, okay, and of course it's always easier to it's always a manager that will lose his job over these kind of things. But yeah, despite all the factors that Scott mentioned here, and that really, yeah, put things a little bit in perspective, it's not only his fault. I do think he also could have done better and probably should have done better over the last couple of months. And yeah, that's with both the player material that they have in most positions and well, my main point from the beginning, the expenses they have in comparison to other clubs, that they can't really afford to have a transition year, I guess. I'll talk about other teams having transition years for several seasons in a row in a little while as well.
No, I think, yeah, I agree. Like, obviously, yeah, like definitely the infrastructure stuff. I think it's so obvious when you say it, Scott, and you kind of lay it out like that. It's just so clear that needs to be realigned. And I think where Dyler's lost his job is basically, in my opinion, it's on there's three games that have cost him his job. It's the late defeat to Antwerp, the late defeat to Anderlecht, and then the cup defeat to Union. I think those are the three games that they've looked at and they've said, that's three times in the space of a couple of weeks where we've lost games late on. Then obviously you get kind of the media kind of very, like there's a lot of media scrutiny on everything that a Club Brugge head coach does. That's just kind of the nature of the beast when you're in that role, much more than any other place. And I think you can like kind of see it in this game, can't you? Like you look at his substitutions, Nusson, Kasper Nielsen come on the 60th minute. That's basically after Zahir Salam's scored the equaliser. Barbara and Talby come on in the 86th minute, a minute after Koita scored the winner. So it's kind of like you're reacting. Why weren't you more proactive to win the game and stuff like that? And I think we've spoken about that a load. So I think it's slightly Dyler, slightly the club as well. And then at the end of the day, the only person that's going to lose out of there is the head coach, isn't it? There's no kind of, the head coach isn't going to win. So yeah, I think my kind of thing was when you look at the table, the squad should never have been that far off challenging. Like as good as Union have been, that squad should be a lot higher up. But you've been through, like we've just mentioned a couple of names there. Dyler felt like a very good choice. Last year, he'd done a very, very good job at standards. So you're kind of like, well, where are you going to go now? Rick DeMille? Anyone? I mean, we've said his name 3 or 4 times. He's kind of got all over the place.
Imagine being Nicky Haye. You're going to go managing a European quarterfinal soon.
Maybe Nicky does a good job. Like, I don't know if he wants to. Or Michal Jonkoe. He's kind of there as well, isn't he? The old East End guy. He's gone. Caretaking at least to potentially assistant at a European game.
What we're going to see now, or what we should be seeing, is the technical director coming in first, as I was saying. If that doesn't happen, if they appoint a new T1 before the technical director comes in, then we're going to see more of a circus, because obviously those two roles absolutely have to be aligned. And I'm sure that was Ronnie's big worry. Ronnie probably thought, I might get sacked. You just never know. There are whispers, all of that stuff that coaches have to deal with. But his biggest worry was probably, oh, fuck, I hope the new technical director's aligned with me or I'm definitely going to have a problem. So, yeah, that's something we have to watch out for first. And I think, you know, in making the decision now, it's slightly weird for me, I think. If the decision had been made privately, which obviously it had a little while ago, they probably should have left it a little bit longer. I mean, I'm looking at it thinking, you've got a European quarterfinal there, you're changing the coach in the middle of this. It's not great, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a mess. But yeah, as Joris was saying, hell of an opportunity for Nicky Hyann.
And there's another element, I guess, like lately also he's been more or less fighting publicly in the media with his bosses. That generally doesn't help to not get sacked.
Yeah.
Never a good idea.
With the Walloon media already, that will never be forgiven. And it's worth pointing out to everybody, Standard Liège fans listening will probably be enjoying this a great deal because they've been enjoying the last two or three days more than anybody.
So he's lost the Flandrian papers and he's lost the Walloon papers. I feel like, yeah. I wouldn't come back if you get offered it. I mean, they did change before a big European game last time and they got absolutely battered. And that just kind of summed up the old Scotty Parker era. One of the most bizarre eras in Club Bruges history, probably. Absolute disaster class. We mentioned two of those teams that ended kind of Dyler's tenure. Antwerp and Union, they drew 1-1. Really late goals, actually. Nielsen, the 84th. Kirk in the 92nd. Literally only came on about the 89th minute, I think, to get that one. Union down to 10 men for the last couple of minutes, but in typical Union fashion, they took the lead. Gustav Nielsen called up to the Sweden squad, first time since 2017, 2018, since when he was playing in the Allsvenskan. So congratulations to him. Kind of a little bit of a lost opportunity for Union to extend that lead over Anderlecht. But then it's kind of one of those weird ones, isn't it? Like when they went down to 10 men, any other team, you'd like, yeah, take a point. Then taking the lead and then losing it late on. It's just like one of those kind of like circus things. It's just be quite frustrating for them. But at least they have a 3-point lead over Anderlecht. It could have been a lot worse if Anderlecht obviously had beaten Kortrijk.
Yeah, I mean, imagine taking the lead so late in a game and kind of blowing it. We've seen it happen before, but that's kind of a sore one, you know, for anyone anywhere in the league. I just, you know, what do you think, guys? I mean, is there something slightly controversial about that equaliser? I know a lot of Union fans were deeply, deeply unhappy about it, and we've actually got a listener question this week, which is alluding, I think, directly to that. Do they have a reason to feel hard done by this week?
Yes, because of that last goal, I can keep my hands up a little bit because last week I was a bit defending that Badji didn't get the high handball whistled against him in an attacking position. I could see that in a way for the final goal, and here Kerk clearly also touches the ball. Also, well, can't really do much about it, but like I suppose our standpoint should be the same. Also, the referee department said last week it was a mistake though as well. So like, yeah, they should. That's the main point now. Six days before that, the statement has come out that it was a wrong decision. Yeah, and then the same thing happens again and bites them in their bottom parts. But how Bataille didn't get a red card is also beyond me. That challenge was ridiculous. That's a weird one. Although I have to also admit I didn't really watch this game, but I've heard Union has been. Yeah, okay, they're not all, they have that in them. Sometimes it's good for them, but here maybe they overdid it again a bit. Then were a bit irritating using all the tricks in the book. I'm also surprised that even though, well, I guess Machida could have gotten the second yellow card a bit earlier. I'm not completely surprised he didn't get it. What happened was he kicked the ball against an Antwerp player, and the ball was still into play, so that's why it's not probably not given, but he clearly just kicks it against him just because it's an Antwerp player. But that way, Uno will get the throw instead of giving away a corner or a throw into it to Antwerp. But it was not really about that, I fear. But in the end, he did get that one, his second yellow card then as well, which was also a little controversial the way he got it, I guess. Like, initially, it didn't really look like the referee was going to give it, but then the pressure of the Antwerp players, it seems like that made him give that second yellow card. Yeah, it was a weird game anyway. Like, first half was, well, from what I've heard, I haven't really watched much of it. But the first half must have been not so great. And in the second half, it really started to explode on all senses, which is an encouraging sign, because those two sides, well, they really start hating each other. Lazare was also hating on the referee after the game. He felt that they were hard on. We'll have this fixture twice more in the cup final. That's what I was mainly alluding to as well. So, like, so there's going to be a lot of spice in these games now between those two sides. And, well, it's not that there's a lack of spice between other sides in the top six at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension in the top six between a lot of clubs. It should be quite a spicy playoff, championship playoffs. There's a big battle to get into those championship playoffs. Quite hard to work out where we need to start on this one, but I think we'll start in Ghent. They knew that they needed to win. Charleroi knew they just needed a point. So the natural conclusion is that Ghent win 5-0 and Henri Gendelman scores 4 goals, because, like, well, what else was going to happen in this game? The man had only scored 2 goals before. And I'd seen them, actually. That was the game I went to, the Wrestler game. He scored 2 league goals then, 4 in this. I just kept seeing the notification popping up, and I was like, it can't be him just scoring all these goals. I saw a lot of Charleroi fans after this say that this was one of the most disrespectful performances they'd ever seen from the club and from this team. And I can't really blame them. I think you're going into this game knowing that you just need a point, like, batten down the hatches, you know what I mean? Like, defend for your lives, do that sort of stuff. They're dreadful, absolutely dreadful. And you don't lose 5-0 at the end of the season, like, when you need that. And I think this is why I kind of look a bit...
Clearly they can't defend, so why would you go batten down the hatches in defense?
They can't score either. That's the problem.
They need to practice. They don't do anything.
Yeah, it's just so that they're now going into the playoffs after this performance, and you just look at it, you're like, is there any fight in this team? Like, that's what I see. I see a team that has absolutely no fight, and you're just looking and you're thinking, is like Mazu is, as far as I'm aware, he's still there. But like, who knows? Like, he's not doing a Kofeld, that's for sure. He probably believes that he can keep them up. I mean, again, they should stay up, that they've got that 5-point lead. But that, again, they just lose that first game of the playoffs and suddenly it's down to 2 and that's it. Like, it's completely game-changing. Obviously, at this point, they didn't even know that they were in... Like, they were technically still safe, despite being 5-0 down. Like, we'd also said last week that, like, their goal difference is so bad, or was quite bad, like, that could sway things. But they just absolutely laid an egg here. And I think this... Like, we saw Erpen do it last year where they lost, 7-0 on the final game of the season... narrowly avoid relegation. It felt like Charleroi kind of didn't ever think that Leuven were going to win, so they kind of just gave up on this game early on. I was kind of lost for words when I saw this result coming through and seeing the goal scorer was Henri Gendelman with 4. And when you see the goals, they're so easy, and it's just this. If I'm a Charleroi fan, this is incredibly alarming going into the playoffs. Like, I would be deeply, deeply concerned about this team.
Absolutely. I mean, we were talking earlier about psychology and how that can work for and against you. And this is an interesting one as well. You know, you need a win would have worked wonders, a point would have done them, and what you get is that performance. I mean, on Gendelman, actually, the remarkable thing for me about that is he only played 2/3 of the game. He comes on as a substitute after, I think it was like 29 minutes. And, walks away with 4 goals. So that in itself is like, pretty impressive, you know what I mean? Even if he'd played 90 plus minutes. I thought Tisa Daly had a really good game. He just had Charleroi on toast. Do you know what I mean? He's like, he went, right, this lot are not up for it. I'm going to have some fun here. Do you know what I mean? And just had a bit of a riot with them. Gent missing out on playoff one on goal difference is a bit brutal. You know, I suppose we've been talking for weeks about whether we would do it, and I think we all agreed for weeks now that we felt they were the ones that were going to miss out, which it's nice to be right about that, everybody. I was tweeting about that a few days ago. It's really nice to be right about our playoff one predictions.
Well, I have to admit, I'm not sure if both Ben and I actually had the same prediction. You definitely got it right, but I'm not. I don't remember mine, to be honest, but I might have gone for a surprise, and I'm sure Ben went for a surprise.
He's too honest. Yeah, I mean, it's nice to get things mostly right. Mostly right. Yeah, Gent missing out is a sore one. If you're going to miss out, you would rather miss out. Missing out in goal difference is it's a bit brutal. It's a bit of a slap in the face. But, you know, as Ben was saying the last couple of weeks, they're probably going to do a very Genty thing and storm playoff two in the end. We'll see what happens there. But, yeah, all sorts of alarm bells going off around Charleroi before this game. And, yeah, back to the psychology again. How is that pumping going to play into the way this goes? Because looking at it, you know, one win based on the other team's form might be enough for Charleroi to kind of, you know, see them safe. But you've got absolutely zero confidence, zero, that's going to happen.
Well, I'll try to be a bit positive about Charleroi. It was a wonder that they did not get a lead in this game right before, like, everything fell right for, well, wrong for them and well for Gent at inside the 5 minute span, more or less. They missed three really big chances. Well, and Roof really saved definitely one really well, and well, the others he did well as well. And that was already around the 14th minute mark, so that's already quite far in the game, even. So, yeah, but then they concede twice before the first half is gone, of course. Yeah, and I think then you probably feel also a bit like, yeah, okay, we'll have to depend on other results anyway, because we are not going to do it anymore. And I guess you can blame them for that, but I also feel like, okay, maybe, yeah, but it still, of course, it's never a confidence boost if you get something like this, indeed. But yeah, I'm just trying to be a bit of devil's advocate here. If things wouldn't have gone a little bit differently right before halftime, well, football is a funny game, Do you guys know who was the last person scoring four goals in one game in the league?
Frey? Michael Frey?
There's somebody after that, I think, isn't there?
There is, yes. And he was also in the stadium last...
Gift. The Gift.
Yes, last season as well. Yes, exactly. Giving the... Well, yeah, he gifted his four goals to Gundogan there. A surprising one, but indeed. But yeah,
does Omri know that form isn't going to be passed on? It's a one-off.
Well, we don't know that, but I guess he's not really there for scoring the goals, anyways. Of course, to pitch in a little, but not necessarily in the same role as Gift Orban. Well, what worth a mention is Fernando Spardo also getting his first goal. Was also the first goal in the game, so arguably even despite Gandelman's four, the most important one. It was their first win against Charleroi at home in the last 3 years. And the fourth season in a row, they miss out on the title playoffs, like however they were called and in whichever form they were, four or six teams. I think they've always narrowly even missed out there. And that's, yeah, that talking about teams in transition years, that's what I was alluding to earlier as well. With Gent, it seems to be consistently, which is, well, kind of a contradiction, I guess, but yeah. It was inside this one season they made the transition, obviously, though, as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think kind of we mentioned, yeah, missing out on goal difference and selling all your strikers in January is never a good way of doing that. But to be fair, Gundogan's now second top scorer, level on goals with Hugo Kuipers. scored more than Gift Orban in the league. So there we go. It's absolute chaos in Ghent.
Based on two games. Nice.
Yeah, exactly. You just needed two games to do it.
I had written down the Ghent-Westerlo games will be fun. I guess they still will be, but given recent events, which we already, well, touched on a bit and we'll touch on later on, that a little bit less spicy, but still.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at, I think it was Hetlasten, he did like a, how the European tickets are going to work. And I've already seen how it's going to work. It's like, depending on who wins the cup, the team that wins playoff, the second playoffs is could automatically get a European ticket. So Ghent are automatically going to get a European ticket. So that's just how it's going to be. And they'll be back in Europe. Obviously, that result had a massive impact on the other one in Leuven, which is Leuven against Mechelen. Obviously, we knew that if Charleroi lost, Leuven just had to win because of how bad the goal difference was. They were going up against this Mechelen side that were an absolute tear, who also needed potentially a win to get into the Champions playoffs as well. They fell just short with Nacho Nzingi scoring in the 92nd minute. And quite funny, like on Twitter, Leuven put out a video of the goal with the Titanic music in the background, which I thought was quite fitting, seeing as though they have been an absolute sinking ship this season. And it felt like maybe the goal is just like they've got a couple of people off the ship, but the ship is still kind of sinking anyway. And unless they do something drastic, the ship is still might sink next season. I said before that I was kind of, they are the most, like, to me, one of the most frustrating clubs within the Belgian Pro League. Since coming back up, they finished 11th, 11th, 10th and 12th. And I just feel like they've got so much more potential to do so much better than that. Financially, they've been backed in terms of money has been invested. Like, they lose a lot of money, but the owners don't seem to really care about losing money. They're happy to kind of finance things, but they're just awful, awful recruitment every single season. And I'm just getting a little bit sick of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, every year, the same old problem with this club. And I feel like they're going to lose players in the summer, and they should lose players in the summer. Like, Torsteinsson should be off. Like, someone should come in and get him. He's so effective. Defensively, they shouldn't lose anyone because the defence just isn't really that good. Leerson will probably leave in the summer. I think so. There's been lots of clubs kind of watching him. A couple of Italian sides, I know, have been kind of sending scouts to watch him play. So, yeah, could be transition there again. Oscar Garcia, don't know whether he's going to be allowed to stay or not. But fair play, they managed to stay up. Nicely, it was Nzingi as well who scored the goal. It's kind of like a nice, slightly more local-ish player. I guess I'm sure he's from the academy. But I don't want to say that with absolute certainty because I just don't really understand what goes on at that club anyway. But I'm pretty sure he has come through kind of like the youth system and kind of the reserve team there. So it's nice to see him scoring the goal. The kits were horrendous. I think that's one of the ugliest kits we've seen. unfortunately for Mechelen, it does mean they miss out. But again, like, it's them in Ghent, obviously, now, you'd think, battling for that final spot. And European football is still an option. And if anything, I think you're playing against St. Jude and Standard, Leuven and Westerlo, like, you've got quite a good chance of picking up a lot of points if they can continue the form that they've been on. So in any case, this could actually be an easier way of getting into Europe than the top playoffs, because of how it's going to work in terms of if you finish, what is it, fifth and sixth in that kind of top playoff, you will not have a chance at European football. Whereas if you win this playoff, you either will get it automatically depending on the cup, or you'll have a chance through that kind of that game against a side of the top. So I don't think it's the end of the world for Mechelen to be in this, or Ghent in that instance, because it could be the way into Europe. But they'll be frustrated, won't they, Scott? I think that they weren't able to get this win here. Whereas for Leuven, they may have believed that they could do it, but I don't think they've seen Charleroi losing 5-0 as their way of getting in.
Well, this was actually quite a good game. Both sides were really, really going for it because they obviously both had something big to play for. And maybe that horrible kit that Ben was talking about, the Stella Artois kit, Leuven's third kit, for those of you who don't know, had some fan input. And fans got together and decided, well, what's Leuven known for? And threw a few things at it, Stella Artois being one of the obvious ones, obviously, because that's where the brewery is. yellow diagonal kind of strip. Ben says kind of horrible. I actually didn't know the story behind this until I checked during the game. I kind of missed this little detail. But yeah, maybe they should wear that more often. Played really well, Leuven, actually, and managed to nick it right at the end. And I still can't quite believe that all it took was one goal in stoppage time in the final game of the regular season to save their arse. I mean, you know, the margins are kind of incredible, but go back to the bigger questions behind what's going on at the club that Ben was just talking about. A lot of work to be done there in the summer if the same thing isn't going to happen again, which it probably will. Not investing, no matter what size of club you are, is always a false economy, and investing doesn't necessarily mean in financial terms, in big transfers. You can invest kind of smartly, which can have big margins for you. Circle are a very good example of that as well. They've had great success on that as well, which we'll talk about. But yeah, disappointing for Mechelen, but when you look at their season all in, the first half was a disaster. They were in free fall. Defour wasn't working. The players weren't responding. They made the change. And Hazi has been, to be fair, I've said this before, but a bit of a revelation, actually, much better than I was expecting. The big question for them now is, can they hold on to him?
Good question. Of course. I'll give an unpopular opinion. I somehow quite, you know, okay, it also gives away my taste, I guess, but how tasteless I am, but I kind of liked the shirts from the episode. And I've been one of the only people, I think, because I didn't hear many similar opinions on that. Well, and I've heard a similar opinion on them, not only here, but across the internet and in other podcasts and so on. Already, but I kind of dig them. Maybe not for a full season though, but for like a special edition shirt, yeah, it could be worse, especially with that story behind it in the end as well.
Get your match worn shirts here.
But also need to correct Ben a little bit. So like in the if the cup winner ends in the inside the top two or inside top four, even gets a European ticket in the league, also then it's not automatically going to the winner of the Europe playoffs, but the ticket moves inside the playoffs. So the four, instead of the fourth of the playoffs that needs to play against the winner of the European playoffs, it will be the fifth in that case. So just to clarify that quickly as well. But yeah, remarkable results, I guess. Well, remarkable. Even though I think I'm out of us, this time I can claim something. I've always said like there might be some small result for Leuven that could already change everything, and that is exactly what happened. Well, the way it went, the fashion it went, it's a bit, I could not expect that. Basically, the final kick of the game, not completely true, but almost of the game, in out of all people, and Singi scoring his second goal of the season, and it wasn't a bad one at all as well. So that's, that's definitely something worth mentioning. A clean sheet and for Leuven again as well. And well, according to FOTMOP, since this game was played together with other games, I didn't really watch all of it either. But according to FOTMOP, also man of the match again, crucial, picking up his form from before the game in Bruges last week. Yeah, there's then some statistics before that I wanted to spare Scott before the game, to be honest. But Mechelen haven't won any of their last four games against Leuven, so that's another reason why I was, this was the one game that there could be still something in them for Leuven. That's a streak since 2021, and okay. All with that good question that Scott sent put at the end of his remarks here. This time Hazi might have lost the game a bit as well because of some weird changes. I think there was a triple change where he put out both Slimani and Hermans. If you need to go, if you know you need to score a goal, or you almost certain that you need Skorga. Well, I guess in that at that stage it was not completely sure, but yeah, that you better score a goal, and one goal is all you need, most likely as well. Yeah, that is a bit of a strange one. Also, the players themselves could have done better. Like right before the Nsingi scored, there was a counterattack from counterattack where it was five Mechelen players against two from Leuven, which yeah, they should have done better because yeah, that didn't end up in the back of the net somehow. So that's never a good sign. Feel like somehow it's maybe as bad as, well, not as bad as Gent now four seasons in a row, but also it seems to be a Mechelen thing to not get into the Champions playoffs at any point. Like, even though they were in the best position before the game started here. Yeah, and that's why, well, obviously with one goal, if they would win, they would definitely be inside these playoffs because they were in the best position before the games. But yeah, that didn't happen. Disappointments for Mechelen, but I guess indeed, they still had a really good second half of the season, and they will not be too disappointed. Well, probably at the moment still, for a few days and for a few weeks maybe still, but yeah, they will be happy with where they are in the end, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't get relegated, so that's always a bonus. Same cannot be said for Molenbeek. You'd think going into that game with Cercle Brugge, like Kortrijk have just won, you'd think like this should be some sort of incentive to at least like try and get a point or something like that to not be bottom of the table. They were absolutely useless in this game. They were just bullied constantly, like, yeah. Everyone was getting pushed off the ball. That didn't matter where you were positioned, you were just getting pushed off the ball. I think so. Denki obviously scores the first. Utkus just wants it more in the second. The Minder goal, I think the Minder goal is the one for me where it was just so obvious that who wanted it more. Felipe Augusto came on for Le Martial, who went off with, which looks like a pretty bad injury. So I haven't seen any update on that. Nazinho also went off with an injury as well. So it's kind of like they lost a couple of players in this game, Cercle. But Augusto came on and he just pushed two centre-backs off the ball to square it to Minder for the third. It was so easy. Sommers wanted it more for the fourth. Honestly, I think I was messaging you guys, like, it was the same sort of like repeat of the Anderlecht game. It was like, Cercle could have whatever they want. Matagay gets sent off at the end. It was just absolute car crash. Bruno Irles, has had no effect on this team. Absolutely no effect on this team. They look worse than they did under Capaca. Like we talked about Charleroi being complete, like kind of imploding in that one. Molenbeek, at least like you always said, Charleroi had some chances. Molenbeek did nothing in this game. They were awful. Awful, awful, awful. Varlason just had to do a couple of things, like claim some crosses, come out and get the ball. But it was just a party for Cercle. It was just a party. It was a great atmosphere. The fans were loving it. They did their job. They obviously knew they had to win to get into the top six and then hope for some results elsewhere. I think it was when the Vestalo goal went in that the fans just started to celebrate and cheer. Like it kind of like reverberated around the stadium. Obviously, Genk then equalised. But at that point, it didn't really matter because then obviously Leuven beating Mechelen kind of confirmed their spot in there. Fully deserved based on this performance. But for Molenbeek, honestly, like this team just needs to go. In my opinion, they should just be sent down after this awful, awful performance. And again, like Molenbeek fans are fuming and I can understand why. Like it's completely another abject performance at the crucial point of the season.
Yeah, big, big, big trouble. Winless in 13 and no performances of any kind in 13 either. Miro Muzlic, actually, in the lead-up to this game in his pre-match press conference, Ben was talking about how Cercle bullied Molenbeek and could really kind of sense the weakness, if you like. And he was talking the day before about how the game earlier in the season at the Edmund Martins in Brussels that the Cercle lost, he said that they lost that because they let the physical side of the game go and they didn't compete with Molenbeek that weekend. They made sure they did this weekend, and I think that was drummed into them before the game. You know, be overly physical, impose yourself on them because this side aren't playing well and aren't feeling good about themselves, so they're there for the taking. And as Ben time is saying, yeah, absolutely he did. I mean, you know, could have been so many more. Big Kev, 23 and 28 now, he's actually outperforming his XG as well, which doesn't surprise me because he does take quite a lot of shots. But yeah, brilliant season. Minda, Ben mentioned, another really good game. His value's rising by the week for me. And I'm just really, really pleased that Cercle made it into playoff one, actually. I think they really deserve it. We know there's a master plan that's been in place there for, well, at least a couple of years, maybe a little bit longer now, that is right for the Belgian Pro League. It fits. They've got a template that works. They're bringing in players that fit those profiles, that start to produce the goods reasonably quickly as well. And they have a coach who communicates very simply and directly who the players really respond to. So they've got a brilliant recipe going on there. And they deserve that just for their consistency. Even when they lose a game, you know, they never go on a really bad run that makes you think that they're going to be in big trouble. So that topsy-turviness of the Cercle of the past, if you like, where they were always flirting with relegation, feels like a million miles away now. This is a side who, yeah, playoff one for the first time and are really building something. And there are plenty in that camp who believe that the best is yet to come.
But what is still to come then, of course, is the question mark there. Especially since, not the right time to talk about it. But Scott already gave all the praise, I guess, that they didn't get that many points against teams in the top six currently. So that's why I'm a bit skeptical about that best of is yet to come. Saying together with, indeed, these injuries that could hamper them as well. I also haven't seen any injury updates on yet, but that there are quite significant players that if they would have to miss them for all or many games, that would really be an issue for them, especially Le Maréchal is arguably been their best player in the past few months, even though in the beginning he was not even starting, of course, and obviously they have the top scorer in there, so they have a few good players, but he definitely is an important position as well to really carry a team. So that's not that much to say about this game in general, I guess, though. For me anymore now, definitely both halves starting with quick goals from Cercle Brugge, came out on flying on all cylinders against a side where that also lets you push that you can push over. Yeah, not a surprising result, I guess, even though the scoreline, yeah, it could have been more, indeed, rather than this. So that's the worrying part for Cercle, for Molenbeek, for them. For Cercle, then, yeah, Champions playoffs, indeed, after all. It looked like now with the back end of the season that they might just narrowly miss out. But a very much deserved playoff, Champions playoff spot. For RWDM starting rock bottom now, they made it even before the playoffs started. It's looking difficult to see them not in that same position after these playoffs, but then we go back to the circle back to the beginning, I guess. Now it's a completely different competition, and yeah. They can't lose 30, not win 13 times in a row again anymore. But of course, they need to win quickly. That's for sure. And of course, everything is all to play for because the difference between the last three at least is really just 1 point. So there's a lot of riding there on these first two games for either side. Therefore, the red card for Gay, then also adding insult to injury, might be worse than the results that more or less was expected, I guess, here for Cercle. But yeah, they will have to miss him at least for one and maybe more games. I'm not certain. Was it a double yellow card? Anyway, they will have to miss him. It was double yellow. They will miss him for one game. But yeah, that's already one game less. And like I said, the start there. Well, like everyone knows, the start there in such competition is really important.
Yeah, I mean, it can completely shape. I think you're right, those first two games in the relegation playoffs will really shape anything. I mean, they're 6 points adrift of safety, so I don't see how they're going to claw that back. And like, yeah, I just, I just think they're gone. They're playing like they're gone. Like, that's what's so depressing for me watching them, was just like, there's no fight in this side whatsoever. there was very little fighting or anything at the end of Vesela against Genk, was there? There wasn't really anything going on at this one. Ravel Tajir scores for Vesela. Brian Aidan equalises. Everyone's like, this is great. Bonsu Bar's already been sent off, but everyone just kind of looks around and thinks, you know what? You've got the point you need. We've got the point we need. Why don't we just not play football? Why don't we just start shaking hands, clapping each other, chatting to, who was the ref? Was it Visser? Yeah, Visser's just like, Visser like kind of looked around like, what the hell is going on here? And everyone was looking at him and he was like, what do you want me to do? I can't make you play. Absolute farce, absolute farce. And I'm sure I've seen this happen before. I can't remember if it was a World Cup qualifier or a Cup of Nations qualifier. I think it was between Cameroon and someone else where they both knew they just needed a 0-0 draw. So they were like, well, we'll just play for the 0-0 draw then. This has led to the end of Rick de Mil. Rick de Mil is the kind of casualty of this event. The kind of one of the, I think it was, is it the CEO of Vesela or someone who within the kind of hierarchy of Vesela said that he was shouting at them to start playing. From the stands, which didn't work. He's been fired because it brings into disrepute, I guess, their values and norms or something, is what they said. So he seems to have just borne the brunt of everything that's happened in this. So whether or not, it's kind of, there's loads of different ways of looking at it, isn't it? It's either Vesela have said, well, look, we got rid of the culprit, so you don't need to damage us or fine us for this, because they are going to be under investigation for, I think it was kind of like lack of fair play or match fixing. Hein van Haasbroek was fuming, obviously, because this result affected him. Some people say it's not match fixing, but I think if you look at the if you describe what match fixing is, it's clearly match fixing. Like, whether they decided to do this before the game or not, which I don't think they did, but like in that moment, you've fixed the match. You've decided that we're just going to not do anything about this. So the players have to take some blame for this, because they clearly are just as involved in this situation. It was fast score, wasn't it, guys? At the end of the game, Genk are just playing around the back and Vesela players, they're just not even moving. Awful, awful, awful scenes to see, I think, at the end of a game like this. And I think Rick de Mil is kind of bearing the brunt for it, but I don't think he should be the only one that is punished. I think that'd be really, really unfair if he's the only one that gets done off the back of this.
So many questions. I've got so many questions about this. When news broke of this morning, I was, you know, as I was saying to you guys, I was saying, this is wild. Actually, it's the last thing I expected to happen. I think everyone was aware of how angry the Westerlo leadership were. You know, there's been stories of them physically shouting from the director's box down to the dugout, you know, while this was going on as well, as Ben was alluding to. Nothing was happening. And I think there was a lot of very angry people on their side. Lots of hearsay and rumour as well about what Rick de Mil said to Wouter Ranken on the touchline while this was going on, and in the lead up to it as well. So, you know, of course, there'll be conspiracy theory nuts out there, and we've actually seen some of them today. Not fans of either of these two particular clubs, incidentally. But yeah, really, really strange one, this. And on Rick de Mil's part, I think he will probably live to regret this, actually. Hein van Haasbroek, as Ben was saying, been raging about this because of the implications for his club. He was saying today that he'd be surprised if Rick de Mil got a T1 role again, certainly in Belgium after that. You know, he said people remember these things. And the thing about Belgian football is it's quite a small world. Most football, you know, communities actually are in respective countries, but in Belgium, it is quite a small world. There's a lot of appointments from within the country, and this is an interesting one that could well be, and I think Hein could be right, could well be very damaging to Rick de Mil. It's strange because, as Ben was saying, we have seen this before in other competitions, in international competitions. The weird thing about this one for me was there was no pretense at them even trying to play. You know, in international competitions where we've seen this, there's been a vague kind of going through the motions of everyone knows what's happening, but they're still just knocking the ball about. That wasn't even happening here. They literally did just stop. It was one of the strangest things to kind of see, and probably some are going to be talking about for a while yet.
Yeah, I fear so. This was so weird, and I'm definitely not a fan of this. This was, well, okay, quickly jumping to the mill and not being able to get a job or something like that. But Van Hazenbroek is really the last person to say anything about that, because he has literally thrown around everyone in Belgian football over the years now. So I mean, yeah, okay, that part of his speech, it might not be the one to take away, but obviously it's a good quote. But
like all things in life, Joris, is who you know, isn't it?
Also, another topic here that he's not unspoken of himself. I can imagine his anger though as well, because the last minutes of the game were, of course, also played. Were played on big screen in the Gelamco Arena, because that game was already over. Which is another topic we can talk about a little bit. You can't completely get every game to stop at the same point, obviously. But also, you can at least arrange that not only the first half starts at the same time, but second half at least as well. To at least, to narrow the difference a little bit. Because now in the first half in Westerlo, there were 5 minutes added on. In Gent, probably one or maybe even none. That creates this kind of window of opportunity, which was, well, obviously not taken well. The weird thing is, of course, also in these other games, it has happened before. The teams, there's the famous, in English? The game in Gijón in Spain, on the World Cup there, the famous draw there. There was also... there are plenty of examples over the years. Ben also gave one already in Africa. But all of those, the both teams really are happy with that result, because that's the result they need. But Westerlo by that point obviously also already knew, like, well, even if we lose, it doesn't matter. and if we win, then they put themselves in a better position. So they actually did not have much to gain from it. But this was really painful to watch. And at least pretend. I mean, okay, on the other hand, that also sounds a bit hypocritical that we would forgive the other sides. Well, it's also clear and it's actually the same. But there, the thing mainly is weird, and coming back to that, they it's not that both teams at that point in time still had to go for the draw there to get the result. But just to make the point of not making it too obvious is maybe not always the strongest one, but here, there is even the moment where Kayembe passes the ball to Madsen van de Voort. At that point, is not even in front of his goal. So if Madsen just tries to score, he will score, basically, and he just passes the ball back. I mean, come on, this was not a fun watch. It was 5 minutes. I mean, most likely, the big chance, even if they would have played for it, like, the most likely result would have been the same. But this was really a disgrace. On the other hand, there's so many weird factors on that as well. Of course, the first one being Westerlo taking the lead like 10 minutes before the final whistle. Originally, to take the lead late on anyway. So I don't know why that would happen if they would go for that fixed draw from in the beginning already. But on the other hand, there's so many factors on that. Of course, from Genk's point of view, being a man down there, coming back with that man down, I'm not happy with the draw in Westerlo, to be honest, just as a fan point of view as well, in general, despite of whatever is happening. Of course, there are consequences, but I would have rather taken the risk and win and be a bit closer inside these playoffs already as well, especially since the risk was relatively low. Obviously, the risk is, of course, to really fall out if it goes wrong, so I do understand why you would do this, but this was just a shame. Shame to watch, and I personally also hope that there will be some kind of sanction. I don't know how you could best reinforce this. Also, like, I also don't feel like any kinds of points deduction or anything that doesn't really make sense at all either. But some individuals probably would need to be punished. And, I guess it's in my point of view, but it was way too clear and way too obvious, even though if that's not, in my point, also not necessarily the best argument. But yeah, just there are too many things that are like making these very weird situations. And yeah, I mean, not fun to watch. Yeah, even though it was relatively beneficial to my side, I did not enjoy like watching this. Like I said, I'd rather try to win, even if that might be then the with a chance of losing, even if the stakes are quite high, obviously. But not much of that anymore. Actually, I guess I'm already repeating myself and you guys here, but just not a fun watch.
Yeah, I think I've got two kind of things on this. I think the first one, and I feel like I've probably mentioned this before, and it's something that, yeah, it's kind of been a growing feeling within my kind of footballing outlook over the last couple of years, I think, is that you're losing the essence of what the game is, and the game is entertainment. It's an entertainment. I go to watch football. Yes, I go to because I support Reading and I want Reading to win and I enjoy it when Reading win, but I also go to be entertained. I go to see entertaining football, and this is not entertainment, like two teams just giving up. It's like this is where the game's gone too far into kind of being this business and this kind of thing and that, and it's so depressing. I know what you guys mean about like at least don't make it obvious and that, like obviously we're not saying that the teams that didn't make it obvious aren't bad things anyway, but it did cause a change in kind of situations. Like I know at the World Cup it meant that all those games got played at the same time, so you couldn't have this situation where teams know and stuff. But obviously, it can still happen like in this. And I think my kind of, without really thinking too much into it, is just to say, right, well, the kind of the thing you could do if you really want to punish these sides is to deduct them both 3 points, because then they both drop into the playoffs below and they're not in the playoffs that they were in. For Vesterlo, this is incredibly damaging. And I think financially it's a very difficult one to be able to do, because then they could get relegated and this has massive implications. But it's also saying, well, look, you can't just, as a playing squad, look at what you've done to this situation that you've cost yourself by just messing around here at the end. So that's kind of the one thing I can think of. Obviously, Ghent then win out of this. Charleroi then somehow survive and they get quite lucky. But we could also say they kind of gave up at the end, didn't they? But I just feel like it's one of those things where it's like you've got to kind of uphold the entertainment factor of this game, because, yeah, I think there is a lot of debate around here if we're losing that kind of idea of kind of the individual brilliance of players and the individual skill and teams. As football's getting maybe more tactical and maybe kind of there's more structure in place and stuff like that, we do kind of lose it a little bit. And these players that aren't as efficient, but they're quite skillful, kind of miss out and stuff like that. But there's no skill on show when two teams are just passing around the back and not trying to score. Like, what's the point? Like, we may as well watch paint dry or something else, mightn't we, at that point? It's boring. It's really, really boring. I find keep ball boring, and teams that keep possession and want possession all the time, that's boring. This is just like that times 200, because no one's actually trying to bloody score. So there has to be repercussions. You can't just let this thing slide. But like you always said, I don't really know what you do apart from the points deduction. But I feel like it's setting a precedent that's then quite difficult to maintain, and you're kind of opening up another can of worms, and there'd probably be legal battles around that. Especially you'd think Vesterlo would probably mount some sort of legal battle, because they'd then drop to what, 27 points. That's the gap of just 3 points to Kortrijk, Erpen and that lot. So yeah, it'd be quite a difficult one, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think we're all pretty much in agreement that something does need to happen about this. Before we get onto questions, let's leave the Pro League for a little bit. Let's go down to the Challenger. Obviously they'll be kind of looking at who's mixing it up in the relegation zone, because a couple of those sides will be going down. But Scott, a quick overview of what's been going on in the old second tier.
Well, match day 26 this weekend, 4 games to go in the season before the playoffs kind of kick in there as well. Scores roundup for this weekend, Club Next drew 1 each with Sarang. Beveren lost at home to Patro Eisden 1-0. Zulte Waregem lost 1-0 to Beerschot in what was probably the big game of the weekend. Liers beat RFC Liège 3-2, had to come from behind to win. Lommel beat Anderlecht Futures 3-1. Denza lost, slightly surprisingly, you might think, to Frank Baran 3-2. Dendar beat SL 16 4-1 and Yongenk beat Ustend 3-1. In terms of where we are, and we're getting down to the proper business now, Beerschot have gone back top because Denza surprisingly lost. They've dropped to third. Lommel, courtesy of their win, have leapfrogged up into second into an automatic promotion spot. Dendar, who nobody are really talking about, are now in fourth, and they'll be quite happy with that, cruising along with nobody talking about them, doing, you know, pretty well. Beveren, another loss. They've slipped to eighth now. That's their fifth loss at home, and to be honest, looking at it, they're in a real battle now to see whether they can even make the playoffs, actually, because of that. Tough one for them. Some good news on the Ustend front, everybody. Their administrators have now paid off all of their outstanding debts in relation to VAT, social security and transfer fees. So that makes them a much, much, much more attractive investment option. All the Coos boys need to do now is, over the next four games, make sure they stay in the division.
Yeah, that is fantastic news. As a fan of a fellow club that's in an absolute pit of financial mess, I can imagine that must be such a relief for the fans to know that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. The players at least have been doing their part on the pitch from kind of the rest of the end of this season at the moment, kind of trying to keep them in the league, got into a cup semi-final. So, yeah, kudos to them and hopefully the sign of better things to come. Let's quickly go over some questions before we finish. We've got three from Ben, not me. This is actually someone else, at BS Colo. His first one, I think we've kind of spoken about it with the technical director and that sort of stuff with Club Bruges, but does Club Bruges have a plan? I presume this means for like the replacement for Dyler and kind of looking ahead.
I'll give you a short answer because, as Ben was saying, we covered this quite a lot earlier. I think we know what the plan is. We don't know if they're going to achieve it. And as I was saying, look out and see if the technical director comes in first, because, as I was saying, they should be choosing who the new man is. But we'll see if it works out that way.
Absolutely. Joris, give you this next one. How much longer will Felice Mazu stay on in Charleroi? Presuming he hasn't actually been sacked at the moment. I haven't seen anything. So he's still there as of this time of chatting.
Okay. I'll just give a random guess, but I do see them struggling. So after the still 2 weeks, two games that he's in charge, and then we'll make a change still.
Fair enough. Last one from Ben is Anderlecht a legitimate threat to Union? Yeah, I think they definitely are a legitimate threat to Union. I can't see why they wouldn't be a legitimate threat to Union with the gap that it is. I haven't seen, have the fixtures been released? I haven't seen them, if they have been, for the playoffs just yet. So I need to have a look at that. But I think they will be, just because they've got goals. They've got match kind of winners in the shape of like Tlaya. Hazard's playing a little bit better. Leone's been fantastic. They've got Vertonghen at the back as well, who's leading them quite well. Schmeichel's starting to play better as well. So I think they're definitely a threat to Union. I think they obviously are the only threat to Union, but I think we've got a title race on our hands. That is for sure. Speaking of Union, for this one from Justin Toth Romef, or Darth Squidge, who's a long time listener. I think you might be a Union fan, Mr. Darth Squidge, or Mrs. Darth Squidge, depending. So he has two, or she has two. What do you think Union should do if questionable refereeing decisions keep costing the club points? Which fan scene had the best displays in the regular season, in your opinion? Scott, jump in. You can pick which of those you want to answer. You could shaft Joris, or you could give him the nice one. I don't know.
I think the best displays probably this season have come from Standard fans, although I do want a big shout out to Anderlecht fans, by the way. They've had a couple of crackers this season as well.
Yeah, and I forgot quickly already what the first my attention span is really nowhere now. So,
what should Union do if refereeing decisions like at the weekend keep costing the club points?
As a fan of a team that did that, go to the legal court, of course, and fight. but that's another serious answer to clarify that.
Oh, who knows? We'll see what happens. Hopefully, like praying that there's no more refereeing controversies in the playoffs, but there will be, and it's just is going to be part and parcel of the game, isn't it, unfortunately? But hopefully they're not massively impactful on the title race. I hope the team that wins it does so without having any of these things either cost them or do anything like that. Last one is from Herentals Boyles. Next Bruges manager, outside the box thinking. Ex-Ireland coach Stephen Kenny would be interesting. I've got two names, two that probably won't come. One name that I think every club has like been trying to get, Kjetil Knutsen from Bodø Glimt. I think everyone wants Kjetil Knutsen after the incredible job he's done there. He hasn't left, and I just don't imagine that he's going to leave for Club Bruges either. I don't know if he kind of... I think he clearly seems quite happy in Bodø Glimt, unless he's decided to move on at this moment and he's not said. But I feel like he is one of those, like, the style of play that they play. I think Bruges fans would love to see that style of play, but I don't know whether he'll come. And the other name I had is one that was actually linked with... Was it called to like him? I've been linked with Jimmy Tellin from Elfsborg. I think he was linked with a couple of teams. He's like Knutsen, he's kind of taken a little bit of time to build up Elfsborg and the Allsvenskan, but he's got them kind of really challenging at the top of that league and stuff like that in recent years. There have been some great players coming from Elfsborg over into the league. We obviously had Akumu come over, and they've had some other players. So those were kind of my two names going down kind of that Scandinavian route. I'd like to see those, but I feel like if you get the right technical director who'd give, you have to kind of say with Jimmy Tellin, like he took a little bit of time at Elfsborg, you'd have to give him time. And it's like, we've seen the Dyer didn't get time. Why would they give Jimmy Tellin time as well? So the same with Knutsen, I think you'd probably want time for him to kind of really instill that, but you've got Hugo Vettlesen there already. That's someone that knows his style of play and stuff like that. So that's if you want some exciting, interesting football, you go with Knutsen. But I don't know, like, I obviously massive respect for Club Bruges. They are a big club, but Knutsen hasn't left, and I feel like he's probably had offers from other big clubs that haven't kind of worked out for him, and he hasn't gone with. So I don't know why club would be that, unless Vettlesen's on the phone and be like, "Mate, I reckon you could do it here." I don't know if you guys have got any other names you want to chuck in.
Well, I haven't got any names. I'm still trying to get my head around the Stephen Kenny suggestion. That might possibly be weirder than Scotty Parker.
Wait, did you just say that? Oh, yes, you did. indeed. Nothing much to add there.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe, I don't think they'd go for him, but Freyr Alexandersson's obviously done a good job, but I don't think he's got enough done, I guess you could say, to kind of take that.
What about Fink?
Style of play, yes.
Inside the league, I think that, and we're considering it's possible, of course, but they wouldn't go for getting a manager of a team that they're now competing with. I think that would be the more logical choice from my side of it.
Yeah, I think they need someone with big club experience. I don't know. I feel like that's probably what they would go for. But
whether that's in a way he has, I guess, but not as a manager, of course.
No, he did. He managed in the J League as well. So I think I can't remember who he managed there, but I'm pretty sure they weren't minnows, that's for sure. And he did have some good. And we've seen, like, Scott's obviously seen Ange come over, and we're now seeing him at Tottenham. He's obviously one of the more likable blokes in football, I guess you can say. Whenever his press conferences are normally a 10 out of 10. I don't know if he's always asked about. Someone mentioned plastic fans for him, and he went on a tirade about that, which
that was brilliant. That was
fantastic.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he's a breath of fresh air, I think, into the Premier League. And it's funny because he's Aussie, I think. And we're so used to, over here in the UK, Aussies just talking about cricket and rugby. It's nice to see one with better football knowledge than quite a few English coaches, that's for sure. I don't know whether they could find the next Ange. That would be quite interesting. We did have another question, which is kind of like a historical question, which we have taken note of, and we're going to kind of go away, do a bit more kind of research and kind of come back with some better answers on that, about kind of clubs that have fallen away and stuff like that. And there was also mention of one about Ronnie Dyer drinking water every time the camera panned to him.
It's a drinking
Scott
game.
Scott thinks it's a drinking game. He's playing with his mates back in Norway, probably. Who knows? But anyway, thank you as always for all the questions.
And to quickly jump on that historical question already as well, like partially at least, I think there was another part to that question, but one of the part was which of the top teams have been relegated at least. The Standard has only been relegated once, the last, and they came back up in 1921. So that's quite a full century, and they've been close. even Scott can't remember that indeed anymore. But that's definitely the record. Although they were quite close, and technically I guess one side of them might go down this season as well, but I guess that doesn't count. Their senior title has officially stayed up now. Anderlecht have been relegated 4 times, came back up in the last time in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. And for Club Brugge, the same applies, but they've been relegated 6 times, and that last spell was even 8 or 9 years, I believe, even. But they came back up by the end of the 50s. To only talk about the... Well, I think if we're really talking historical big clubs in Belgium, these are the 3 names you would pick. Obviously, there are names that come and go, which... Yeah, that there we might provide some more insights to separately from this podcast still. But that to give at least a short answer on 3 of the names.
That speedy research being done there. Love that. Thanks, Joris. And thanks, like I said, everyone for asking questions. We greatly appreciate it. Obviously, we'll take a break for the international weekend, and then we'll be back once the playoffs begin in earnest. Guys, thank you very much for joining me for the last 30. Looking forward to a couple more.
Likewise. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the international break. Obviously, Belgium have the Republic of Ireland and England coming up. And keep your ears out for a guest slot I did on the Three Lions podcast, where I talk Belgium-England.
Yeah. Friendly is always funny to talk about, no? But definitely still more to come on in this league. It's only beginning, to be honest.
Yes, it really is only just the beginning of this season as we get down to the nitty-gritty. If you like what we do, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. If you have already done that and you want to do any more for us, you can donate to our Buy Me a Coffee links on our socials. You can find it all there. But once again, thank you very much for listening to this episode, and we'll speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.